Fox News. Tired of the same repetitive government narratives? Then wave goodbye to the distractions and rhetoric of corporate media. For this is Anti-Media Radio.
But I want to get the language right.
The big government is in trouble.
What we need in the United States is not violence and lawlessness, but is love and wisdom and compassion toward one another.
What's your definition of me?
And now, here's your host, S.M. Gibson.
It is December the 20th, 2016. My name is S.M. Gibson, and this is Anti-Media Radio. There is a lot going on around the world as we close in on the end of a what seems like a very long year. I don't have to tell you, a lot of craziness has happened, and looks like we're finally going to get maybe some reprieve, and hopefully 2017 won't be quite as nutty as 2016 has been. We're going to go ahead and bring on our co-host for the evening, Mr. Shannon Madden. Shannon, what's going on?
Good evening, Mr. Gibson. How are you?
I can't complain. And then Kevin Knight. Kevin, what's going on, man?
Hey, fellas. Good to be back with you. Merry Christmas. Happy Kwanzaa.
You as well, sir. All right, I'm going to go ahead and start with the top story around the world. Some people comparing it to Franz Ferdinand in 1914 before World War One. Time will tell. As of right now, we've just, you know, it's been terrible. But 2016, how do people respond to stuff? They respond to it by making a meme out of it. And that's what we've seen with this. But the Russian ambassador yesterday assassinated in Turkey, Andrei Karlov. I'm pretty sure most everybody's seen the footage by now. If you haven't,
absolutely bone chilling. I can't recall footage that is this clear. Usually, you see something like this, and it's very grainy and there's, you know, a lot of commotion and this, that, and the other, but there just happened to be a camera when everybody kind of scattered. There was a camera pointed in the gunman's direction. It is a very horrific scene.
It is. I mean, there's no question about what took place in that room as they were getting prepared to Ambassador Karlov was getting prepared to was giving a speech at the beginning of a speech just at a photo exhibition, and the next thing you know, a well-dressed undercover police officer, and there's reports that he was still active with Turkey, and there's reports that says that he had been fired after the failed coup attempt. Is the response to this, I don't think, is going to be well. And it's obvious that what happened was done to undermine Turkey and Russia's relationship with each other. It's possible, too, that it was internal from Turkey, but common sense would dictate that that's not what took place here. And of course, you've got the gunman as well shouting about basically this is retribution for Syria. But what we've seen in Syria and what we've been told here, especially in the West and from mainstream media, a lot of that hasn't been exactly truthful. The media here hasn't reported about the parades in the street from the citizens of Aleppo. The fact that Aleppo has been controlled by these rebels, quote-unquote rebels, are actually members of ISIS and al-Qaeda and the al-Nusra Front. There are no existing rebels, quote-unquote rebels, the term that they love to use, in Syria anymore. I mean, they legitimately are fighting what we have labeled as terrorists for 15 years in the United States. That doesn't make Assad a good guy, but the story we're getting told is something completely different. So if that's the case, Russia labeling what happened yesterday does actually appear to be, I guess, an act of terrorism, because it would have been aligned with the interest of terrorist organizations. Shannon, I know you've been keeping up with this pretty well. What's your take of where this is going to take us and the implications of all of this?
I have no clue. I really don't. It's unfortunately, it's one of those stories, the further in you look, the more convoluted it becomes. I mean, and again, we still don't know all of the motives. We still don't know all of the facts. It's just like a lot of the other news that floats around right now. And it depends on the news source that you're listening to, as far as the slant or the lean of the tone of the story reported. You know, of course, as an American citizen, I'm a little bit concerned, because there is a lot of loud talk in the international community that somehow, some way, possibly implicates the United States and the CIA or whatever agency that the United States would use for such a thing. You know, and again, I'm definitely not going to jump into any conclusions there one bit whatsoever. All I saw was a clip of a man get shot in broad daylight and another man screaming in Arabic, waving the gun. We can expound on the story a lot further, but at the end of the day, that's kind of what we're dealing with, and now we've got to kind of sort through why and where and how and so on and so forth. That being said, I actually sent a link up as we were doing some of our show prep this evening, of the showdown between Samantha Powers, the United States UN ambassador, in a speech before the UN Security Council, and the Russian response to, and she gives this very flowery, eloquent, made for NPR description of the media's narrative of what's going on there. The Russian response, which is filled with statistics that we've reported on the show, that anti-media has reported on its website through numerous stories, just cited simple statistics of America's involvement of what's going on over in Syria and the situation that are funding and creating ISIS and setting them loose about in that region. How we somehow, you know, have thrown all the blame now on Turkey and Syria and Russia and so on and so forth, and we've completely backed off of any involvement that we've had over there. Okay, we're going. None of this ever happened. We didn't kill any civilians. You know, yeah, it's rather brutal. It's up on YouTube. People need to check that one out.
Well, that goes Western, back. Go ahead, Kevin.
Just the Western country, to add to that, you know, of course, the denial about the, of course, bombing the hospitals, Doctors Without Borders, MFS, I think is their acronym. Yeah, the West would never do that whatsoever. Even after Putin himself has called out both Turkey and the United States for colluding with ISIS, more Turkey so with the oil and whatnot. You know, it was just a few months ago when he named names and named, you know, and basically in a huge organizational meeting said, you know, a lot of the people that I'm talking about are are in this office, in this meeting as we speak. So yeah, this is, man, this is, what a time to be alive, huh?
It is. And, you know, we're getting, and the thing is, we're getting propaganda from both sides of this. And this is, of course, what you expect, what you're getting from Russia and Turkey. I mean, there's pro-government Turkish media all day today. They are saying that it was U.S. involvement and CIA, where there's no legitimate evidence of that. The only thing that you could even kind of pinpoint to that would be, what, 4 days ago, 5 days ago, Barack Obama gave a press conference and said, we're going to retaliate against Russia. And then this happens. But, you know, I don't think if the United States was going to do something, they wouldn't be that brazen about it. But with, you don't know. Again, it's all propaganda. And then you have some in U.S. media that are calling this a result of blowback from Russia being involved in Syria, which I find that absolutely amazing, because no matter what happens to the United States, no matter who attacks the United States, no matter what horrific act is committed either here domestically by terrorists or abroad by terrorists, the word blowback is never, ever, ever, ever used. It's because they hate us for our freedom or because whatever their excuse is that week. But this, they're like, oh, yeah, it's clearly blowback because of what Russia's been doing in Syria. So possibly, maybe. But then again, you have to go back and, like I said at the top of the show, look at what's actually happening in Syria, the actual facts of what's happening in Syria, and there are a lot of terrorist organizations that's been let loose in Aleppo and Syria in and of itself that have been shut down and are being run out. And I feel like it is kind of coincidental that this is all kind of wrapping itself up, more or less. The situation in Syria, as terrible as it's been, with Trump coming into office, because, you know, Trump says he's not going to fund the Syrian rebels anymore. We don't know who these people are, which is clear. Democrat Congresswoman Tulsi Gabbard, co-sponsored by Thomas Massie, actually had proposed a bill to stop funding Al-Qaeda and ISIS and stop arming them. So this isn't just some bipartisan or this isn't some partisan conspiracy theory here. This is something that's actually been happening, and it's been ignored for a long time. And now that Trump's saying, well, we're not going to arm and fund these people anymore, it's getting a little bit more notoriety that this is something the United States has been doing. All of a sudden, it's kind of wrapping itself up like, okay, well, we're just going to pull the plug on this and let Syria go ahead and wipe them out because we're not going to help them anymore. With Trump coming in, that's how it appears. Now, if that's the reality of it, I don't know. I am curious to see where this takes us with Russia. I don't know if y'all saw Putin's response.
Don't
what he,
tell me. Don't tell. I hope. Go ahead. I hope that. Go ahead. What was his response?
Well, we have the story up on antimedia.org right now, and. Well, okay, Mr. Gibson, take it away.
It's not the meme. I'm sure it's not the meme that that I've seen gone viral so far. But, yeah, I have to check the story out as well. I have not seen that, so my apologies to both.
Well, what Putin said in a statement was, this murder is clearly a provocation aimed at undermining the improvement and normalization of Russian-Turkish relations, as well as undermining the peace process in Syria promoted by Russia, Turkey, Iran, and other countries is interested in settling the conflict in Syria. What he then went on to say is, the killers will feel it. And
killers, plural. There, and now we only saw one killer in the video, but go ahead.
Well, that's it. You just summed it up. that, you know, if you're going after the person that did it, well, that person's dead. They were taken out by Turkish special forces moments after the assassination. This is clearly Vladimir Putin issuing some sort of broad statement similar to post 9/11 George Bush a little bit.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what I was saying. I was just thinking that as you were talking. Yeah, we're on the same wavelength tonight. That's great. That never happens.
That this is just, we're blanketing, we're going after the terrorists now. Everybody get ready. What will we see? How will we see Russia respond? Time's going to tell with this, but, I don't know.
Let's hope that Russia doesn't make the same, you know, mistake that the United States made and, you know, go ahead and go to war with the wrong country, you know, kind of like we did. But we're going to get more into that a little bit later in the show, because there's another very interesting story up on antimedia.org right now about what I was just talking about.
There is. And, you know, before we move on to that, all those countries, though, are already occupied in some way, shape, or form by the United States.
Yep.
So is this going to lead to more of a confrontation with the United States and some of these terrorist-controlled countries? Are they going to start aligning themselves together with Trump in office? Maybe. I mean, if this happened and Hillary had won, this would be bad. Not bad already. It is. It's terrible. But bad. Way worse. Way worse.
In a small way, you know, she kind of threw a little gas on the fire during the debate down toward the end when she was, Russia did it, Russia did it.
Well, not only that, we've seen the media and Hillary Clinton and even the Obama administration over and over and over point fingers at Russia while they say they have evidence, yet they refuse to show it to anybody. Justin Amash, congressman from Michigan, wrote a letter to Barack Obama requesting that they release any evidence. Of course, you know, no evidence has been released yet. We saw this exact same thing with Iraq. Trust us, they've got those weapons of mass destruction. Trust us, trust us. We promise. We've seen it. We know.
And meanwhile, the fellow that owns the website that the leaks first appeared on, the leaks in question that Russia, quote unquote, Russia hacked, has categorically denied that Russia, or at least anybody that was involved with Russian government, sent him those leaks. Julian Assange has been on record about that time and time and time again for quite a while now, basically repeating over and over again, they didn't come from Russia. They didn't come from Russia.
And, you know, you're going to get the line, well, they're going to lie. But, well, here's what's so amazing is, first off, I still think that somehow ties into Seth Rich, the DNC staffer who got killed and in a robbery that nobody took anything from him. But I still think it leads back to there. But, you know, maybe time will tell and we'll get that answer one day.
No, we won't.
The amazing thing is, though, is they keep saying Russia did this, Russia did that. Meanwhile, by saying that, they're acknowledging that the content of the emails was all true. By saying, well, look, it was a foreign actor that did this. As far as the DNC leaks themselves go, maybe, possibly, that there was Russian involvement, maybe. But as far as the Podesta emails and what we've seen come directly from WikiLeaks, I don't believe it. You know, I haven't seen any evidence. The only thing we've seen is the CIA rounding a bunch of other departments up in Washington, D.C. to get on the same page with them to say, yeah, we've definitely got the evidence.
To get the story straight, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but I don't know who's just openly trusting what the CIA has to say. I mean,
a lot of leftists seem to be doing that. And well, and I say leftists, but a lot of those on the right and from all spectrums seem to be doing that a good bit. I was just arguing earlier, having a little discussion with the guy that runs the page called Left in Alabama, which I met this guy. He's an activist, pretty ardent activist. We were having the same discussion, and he was adamant, and they'd shared an article from Vox by some guy who apparently has been in intelligence circle for some 15, 20 plus years and claims this is something so unprecedented that this is just absolutely never happened whatsoever, that he couldn't believe it. And my argument, you know, and I reminded them that they're beating a dead horse, and even Assange has said that these leaks were not from Russia repeatedly. And of course, the next argument was, well, WikiLeaks is not to be trusted whatsoever. And, you know, and of course, my rebuttal is, well, the FBI and the CIA, who really, do you really trust those organizations? I mean, you would think as many things we've seen here in just the last 8 years, even more so, obviously, in the last 20 years, you would think that everybody across every political spectrum would have a reason to question anything and everything those two organizations say.
Well, I have to ask very quickly. I have to ask, okay, well, cite me some evidence where WikiLeaks has been incorrect.
Yeah, agreed. Yeah, exactly. I thought that was, lies. I mean, all they do is turn around and provide information. They don't really, you know, they're not known for giving a lot of opinions about this stuff, right?
From my understanding, they have it. I mean, they're basically just publishing other people's dirt that's being handed to them. Right. And the stuff that they're publishing, I would say, makes people look bad, which of course it does, but it does more than that. I mean, we got to the point that it's exposing activity that people were breaking the law. We think about this, and this all ties in together with what we were talking about earlier. It openly says in the Podesta emails that of Hillary Clinton acknowledging that Saudi Arabia and Qatar are funding ISIS directly. And she's taking $25 million from these people. Like, that's a problem. And nobody seems to have any issue with that whatsoever. They just act like, well, that doesn't matter because Russia. Look, I don't trust Russia's narrative either. I think when you're talking about a government in general, you can't just run in and go, well, they're clearly telling the truth.
Right.
But at the same time, all these people, when WikiLeaks published what it did about Iraq, and it was looked poorly upon the Bush administration, people were piling on. Look at what Bush did. Look at what Bush did. But in this situation, they're not doing that. And I don't think it's necessarily, I think the reason it's gotten worse, and I know it's been cited that Obama's like, well, we didn't think that he was going to win. We thought Hillary was going to win. So we were waiting on her to win before we did anything about this. If they thought it was a legitimate threat to democracy and the election, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. I think what it really is people look like idiots. Like, honestly, how many, whether it was Barack Obama or George Stephanopoulos or whoever, said he's never, ever, ever, ever going to become president? I think it's just ego, because they all look like fools.
There are a ton of people. Well, and we even said at the very beginning that we didn't see it happening, but I think our kind of, I say our, the anti-media, at least the on our show, the Gibson show, I won't speak for anybody else, I think we kind of called it early on that we thought that he would probably actually acclaim the mantle. But to mention something also, to go back just a second, you mentioned Hillary Clinton. and acknowledging the fact that Saudi Arabia and Qatar were funding ISIS and terrorist organizations of the sort. Ben Swan, news anchor out of Atlanta, Georgia, does those great reality pieces. He actually, I don't know if you remember, but he did a great, I mean, just a fantastic piece. It was like 11 minutes long about the origins of ISIS. And he actually uncovered and provided and showed a document that the intelligence services, I forget at the moment who it was being shared by, betweenst, but they were discussing the fact that they knew that the fall of Iraq, of course, and what was coming out of Syria, if they continued to fund the weapons and the rebels, that most likely a caliphate would rise in its ashes, a jihadist and, of course, a caliphate. So even the intelligence services went one step beyond that and recognized not only were Qatar and Saudi Arabia doing this, but the U.S. acknowledged that a caliphate and something basically what we've got now is ISIS would arise, and look who we had funding that and heading that up and making a lot of moves in that organization. So I just thought that needed to be brought up, that it was much worse than just other countries funding. Is the U.S. acknowledging that it was much worse than what it is? And you're right, if they were going to wait and hold all this information back for an election and they're going to willingly admit this stuff, it goes beyond stupidity. I mean, that's traitorous. I mean, that's you know, there's lives on the line, arguably. Somebody should swing.
It certainly is. And, you know, mentioning that, we have, it comes back to a story we have right now on the front page of the antimedia.org. Saddam Hussein's CIA interrogator, he tried to warn us, but we didn't listen. Former senior leadership analyst with the CIA from 1998 to 2011, a man by the name of John Nixon, who actually interrogated Saddam Hussein after he was captured. There's now a detailed book out and gives an account of the interrogation. It's called Debriefing the President, the Interrogation of Saddam Hussein. Here's the quote from the book. When I interrogated Saddam, he told me you were going to fail and you were going to find that it is not easy to govern Iraq. As Nixon pressed Saddam to explain why, the captured dictator said, Americans would soon learn they are going to fail in Iraq because they do not know the language, the history, and they do not understand the Arab mind. He added that Saddam's leadership style and penchants for brutality were among the many faults of his regime, but he could be ruthlessly decisive when he felt his power base was threatened. And it's far from certain that his regime would have been overthrown by a movement of popular discontent, basically speaking about the Islamic State. And of course, he goes on to talk about how, you know, Saddam Hussein was a terrible guy, but his leadership style was such, and I think this is fairly common knowledge at this point, that there was never going to be an ISIS ever with Saddam Hussein in power. And the reason that, of course, that happened was because of the vacuum of that was created out of the chaos of Iraq, but the Middle East in general. I mean, it spread around the entire Middle East. Look at the Middle East today and look at the Middle East in 2001 and what we've seen across the entire region, from Libya, Afghanistan, Yemen. You even had the Arab Spring, where you saw leadership change. Really, Iran is the only country that's kind of, at this point, stayed intact through all of it. Syria has, kind of, but not kind of either. I mean, the country's been blown apart. And we've got a billion different stories about that, but at the end of the day, it's never made logical sense, no matter how terrible Assad may be, that he would just start having genocide through the streets of his country. That's never made sense. I mean, even Saddam Hussein at his worst wasn't just mass murdering people for no reason by just bombing cities. I think dictators want to be feared, but at the same time, they don't want to kill their entire population either. We've just seen this repeated over and over and over in the region. You know, hopefully we're going to learn from our mistakes. We, you know, we got, what, 30, 31 days now until Trump takes office. I do, like, you know, we talked about on the last show, I do think we're going to see a different foreign policy, but that doesn't mean we're going to see better foreign policy, if that makes any sense, at least in the Middle East.
Yeah, well, and I understand that, you know, and I'm holding out hope as well. Now, given the fiery rhetoric from Donald Trump and some of the, what was it, the safety zones and discussion of that sort of thing, I'm not really holding out any hope. I think it's just going to get a little bit louder and a little bit stranger. Because, again, Donald Trump, at the end of the day, doesn't get to decide whether we pull out of the Middle East. And if you don't believe me, you can ask our outgoing president about that. Remember all that hope and change he was talking about? There was a lot of that that involved us de-escalating the situation over there by pulling out of a lot of our military. That didn't happen. We pulled some out, but it's kind of like when you go, I don't know if you've ever had a friend who had a little bit of a gambling situation, you know, a little gambling problem, and they go to the casino and they come back home and they tell you about how much money they won that weekend. You know, man, I hit the craps table. You wouldn't believe it, man. I won $7,000 in one roll. And then you kind of start trying to pin them down on how much money they actually won for the weekend. And they grudgingly admit that they, well, you know, I lost $1,000. But, you know, but yeah, I'm going back next weekend, man. I was on fire. So, yeah, that's kind of what I think we're seeing here a little bit is a I don't think that things are going to change there. I think that there's too much other interests involved other than, you know, just American policy and us freedom and America and liberation and all that jazz. There's been a lot of money pumped into the wars that we've waged over in that region for us to just pick up and pull out now. Barack Obama experienced that in the first few years of his presidency. We still got all them troops all over the Middle East still. In fact, we have more troops in the Middle East and more campaigns running now than we ever had before over there.
I want to reference real quick a story that's up on antiwar.com right now. And the headline is, Pentagon memo shows Trump not seeking a military confrontation with Russia. But there is a quote from this article that it's you know, take it for what you will, but it is worth noting, however, that while most such memos lay out a whole series of enemies to target militarily, Trump's priorities begin and end with ISIS. The memo mentions in passing a briefing on China and North Korea, but not including them on the list itself. So as of right now, his, you know, the internal memos going around. I don't think it's any shock to anybody that he's not looking to go to war with Russia, especially with everything we've seen with the election. But for his whole everything is supposedly about fighting and destroying ISIS. You know, I agree with you, Shannon, as far as first off, I don't trust him. I don't trust any other politician. I mean, we've seen this over and over and over. We had, you know, the Nobel Prize winner, and then look what we got. He's literally been in war from the day he's been in war from the time he stepped in the office, and he's going to be in war the day he leaves office, and that's 2 terms, 8 years. There's never been a president in the history of the United States for 8 years. We were at war every single day of his 8 years. I don't know. I don't know what Trump's going to do. I don't trust him. But I think again, we've hit on this before, was Trump, the threats, obviously, the real legitimate threats, obviously, the whole China thing, and where that goes and where that takes us. I don't think anybody's going to start throwing bombs back and forth with each other with China. But if they feel threatened economically, who knows? I mean, who knows what's going to happen with that? That's definitely where it seems like he's pointed his finger at most. But with that said, let's say Trump gets in office and then it turns out that we find out that this was some covert CIA thing yesterday, just hypothetically. How does Russia respond to that? Do they just go, well, there's a new president and we're just going to let bygones be bygones here? Or do they retaliate?
That actually will be something that Trump has total control over, and it really depends on the tone and the rhetoric that we set initially with those first few awkward meetings between face-to-face meetings between Putin and Trump. That's going to be coming very soon. In fact, I would imagine that's pretty high on his agenda the first few days that he's in office, is to hurry up and get over there and have tea with Russia.
Well, I don't think he's going anywhere. I think he'll, you know, they're going to be speaking.
I don't know. I really honestly believe it, you know, and again, because he's all about making the deals. He wants the cameras to be on him. And do you think that he's going to miss an opportunity, especially with all of this stuff going on?
It's not his style. It's not his style. His style is to bring people to him. He doesn't go to anybody. That's why they're
there. It doesn't matter if it's at his house or Trump's house, the White House. Still, there's going to be some sort of meeting there. There's going to be some sort of historical whatever, because, I mean, you want to talk about a photo op, especially with all this stuff going on and the chance for him to somehow, some way de-escalate it by having a dinner party at the White House. Yeah, man, he's all over that.
I will say this. Donald Trump meeting anybody as president is going to photo op. Just like, is this really happening? Is this real? Think about it real quick. If Alabama wins the national title this year, Nick Saban and the University of Alabama football team will they be greeted by Trump? I assume so.
Oh, yeah, but, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, it's just the whole thing's surreal. The fact that Donald Trump is going to be the president of the United States, it's surreal. And that's the thing. I never thought Hillary was going to win, and I'm thankful that she didn't win. But at the same time, now we're stuck with Donald Trump, and it doesn't even seem real. And he hasn't even taken office yet. It's almost like this farcical dream from something that was spoken about on The Simpsons 15 years ago in passing, and this joke has become reality. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? Who knows? But while we're speaking about the propaganda of everything, I want to make sure to hit on another story too we've got up right now. On the front page of the antimedia.org, 5 arrested while creating fake anti-Russian propaganda.
Wow, yeah, this is a heck of a story right here.
About Aleppo. That's it. Mentioned Egypt a little bit earlier, but basically, some guys in Egypt hit up a building that was set to be demolished, and we're going to film a video with little 8-year-old girl in a white dress, bandages all covered up in what was supposed to be blood, holding a teddy bear, making it look like, oh, how terrible things are in Syria. And it was being done in Egypt just as propaganda. I think we've seen this on both sides of every war probably for a long time, but this is just nuts that somebody got caught doing this. Were caught by the Egyptian government. They were actually arrested, 5 people, about it. But
Wouldn't this be crazy if they were like the actual like camera crew that filmed all those ISIS propaganda videos that we've kind of scratched our head about, you know, that's very professional with the soundtrack and the whole bit.
Yeah, those things are weird. But it's like, it reminds you of Wag the Dog. I mean, it's just, they're just, you know. And that's not to say there hasn't been terrible stuff happening in Syria. And I think there's been terrible stuff happening in Syria from both sides. That's the thing with this kind of thing. There's never a, they want to paint, there's, you know, the bad guy, you know, with the black hat and the good guy with the white hat, like it's an old Western movie. And that's not the way the world is in reality. I think there's a lot of blame and a lot of bad to go around for everybody. Unfortunately, governments don't work that way. It's the way, you know, George W. said it, you're either with the terrorists, you're with us. That's how pictures are painted. And that way, you know, when they say, well, we're going to go to Iraq, and people, you know, want to raise their hand up and say, but why? And then you're painted in some corner that you're some sort of terrorist sympathizer. But in reality, you're asking a legitimate question. But, you know, that's how propaganda works. You're with one side or the other. And unfortunately, you're not allowed to live in a world where you can question both sides for their actions. You know, it goes back to us talking about what's happening with Russia tonight. Oh, we've all, everybody I know has been called a Russian propagandist. Oh, you're a Russian propagandist. No, nobody's a Russian propagandist. You can question your government without paying allegiance or doing the will of another foreign government, period. And that doesn't make anything that Russia does any better. I don't live in Russia. So Russia's not flushing my tax dollars down the toilet. They're not sending my tax dollars overseas to have bombs drop on people's head. What Russia does, you know, that's there. This is here. That may be a callous way to put it, but...
Well, and again, going back to what I was saying about the video I watched earlier at the UN Security Council meeting, you know, some of the statistics that they raised throughout the, you know, the rebuttal of what Samantha Powers had to say about Russia and Russia's involvement in what's happening in Aleppo, I don't know, it just kind of underscored the fact that how can we, as Americans, and with our policy and what the wars that we've been waging, particularly in the Middle East and the conflicts that we've either, you know, outright brought our own tanks there, or we have funded different military campaigns through proxy wars, you know, how can we cast a finger in their direction? We've got 3-4 pointed back at us.
Oh, certainly. I mean, is there anything, like the definition of the word irony, is there anything that's ever been more ironic than the CIA saying anything about influencing someone else's election?
Yeah, it reminds me of the old, some old saying about splinters and logs. I can't remember. Maybe one of you guys remember that old parable.
That's the world we're living in. Another story, real quick, I just want to hit on this. I mean, this is a war of propaganda, and it's spewed on all sides. And it's up to us to do our best. And I'm not talking about anti-media. I'm not talking about independent media. I'm talking about just human beings walking around. It's up to us to do our best to decipher what's real and what isn't, what's propaganda and what isn't. But another story up on antimedia.org right now, fake Aleppo genocide pic spread online amid renewed calls for humanitarian war on Syria. This is something actually I noticed last week. There were pictures going around of this horrible genocide and everything that's going on in Aleppo. One of these famous pictures that, you know, had made the rounds going viral was from a music video from like 2014. And a lot of the images that are being spread through social media are from previous events. And that's one thing, I, you know, they talk about the spread of fake news. the establishment uses the whole fake news thing to their advantage. They know, and it can be on both sides. It's just human nature. If somebody sees something that's horrific, people don't go do their own research. They must start trying to hold people accountable. The people that are giving you information, you need to hold them accountable. I don't care if it's CNN or anti-media or United States government. If you're presenting information to somebody, you need to go behind them and check to see if it's true before you're repeating it. That's how we get into the problems that we're in, is people just accept these narratives, and it's gotten so much worse because of the power of social media, is they see something and they just react to a headline or they react to a picture and they hit share. And the next thing you know, thousands and thousands of people have seen this narrative. Of course, they talk about fake news, blah, blah, blah. That does happen. But at the same time, I think it happens in the favor of the establishment's narrative just as much or more often than it does the reverse. For instance, everybody's talking about Russia hacking. What is Russia hacked? Where's the evidence? We live in a day and age that the people, no matter where you live, we've been lied to for so long about everything, and we're talking major, major stuff, that how can anybody take people's words for something? And yet, they do. That's what I don't get. You ask somebody, do you trust politicians? No, I don't trust politicians. Do you trust the media? No, I don't trust the media. And then you ask them something about the Russian hacks. Well, that's clearly happened. Well, how do you know it's happened? Because politicians in the media told me so. That's the mentality. They acknowledge they don't trust it while trusting it. It's bizarre. And that's what I think the true, genuine battle, war, whatever you want to call it, is of information and propaganda. And we have to stay away to what's going on. We have to. And at least we do have independent media now that can put some checks and balances in place for corporate media. But I think at the same time, they can use, when there's 200 websites listed on PropNot, and you get down towards the bottom of it, you get some crazy conspiracy pages. I think it benefits the establishment, especially establishment media, to lump in legitimate news site and throw it in with the conspiracy pages, because then it's just, look, you can't trust anything they're saying. It's all fake. Conspiracy theories are the greatest thing that's ever happened to people that want to push lies on people, because then you can just call anything a conspiracy and make somebody look crazy. Meanwhile, calling everybody Russian is a literal conspiracy. And that, that's never addressed.
And I just have to throw this out there. How many conspiracy theories in our lifetime have you and I seen actually come true?
Oh, a lot now.
Quite a bit.
But
so, that's probably why it's not wise to, when anybody says either it's a conspiracy theory or it's the truth, to dig deeper. And we preach that so much on the show, I'm not even going to go into that.
You do. And I think a lot of it, though, is as long as you can't prove it 100%, then again, that goes back to what we're talking about. It's either all or nothing. It's either all good or all bad. And this is what, we talk about 9/11. People assume, well, you have to believe that the whole 9/11 commission, that's all true. It has to be true. And if you believe anything that's not in that book, it's conspiracy. There's clearly a lot that was said that was not true that doesn't necessarily mean that it was some inside job by the U.S. government. There's a lot of questions. Maybe it was. Maybe it wasn't. I don't have evidence to say that it was. But there's enough evidence out there to suggest that a lot of what we were told were lies, and there's a lot of evidence out there to suggest a lot. There was a lot of cover-up going on. I mean, just the Saudi involvement with the 28 pages. I mean, our own Congress has given victims, family members from 9/11, the right to sue Saudi Arabia for being involved in something they supposedly weren't even involved in. Think about that. I don't know. I digress. I'm going down a rabbit hole here. Kevin, I'm going to bring you on here. Your overall perception of the entire propaganda war that we're fighting. Are we losing it? Are we winning it? Are we going to see any change?
Kevin is not with us for the moment, so. Well, and again, I really don't know. I you know, that's the weird part about this is that there's not going to be any clear relief in sight. The only, you know, remedy for this, for, you know, propaganda versus actual real honest to God fact and news and so on and so forth, is under heavy fire. You know, you were mentioning something about independent journalism a moment ago. And, you know, the whole fake news campaign has really caused a lot of those organizations to question whether they're going to be in business when Trump comes into office. That is something that, you know, as far as the suppression of the actual truth, you know, they're both candidates preached heavily about that on and off the campaign trail during the election. And, you know, we're starting to see it in a lot of other countries now as far as journalism coming under fire. And you know, some countries, like I believe it's isn't it Germany that now has laws on the books to, you know, to allow people to sue, you know, fake news sites or, you know, people that are, quote unquote, you know, issuing fake news. But going back to what I just said a moment ago about how many conspiracies we've seen come true in our lifetime. You know, you can't just automatically dismiss and then, you know, punish through some sort of litigation or some sort of, you know, civil penalty, i.e. dollars, for, you know, creating a story or, excuse me, reporting a story actually based on facts and statistics that somebody else that is associated with government does not want to get out there or want people to actually talk about. So they go ahead and they throw the journalists under the bus, and there's still a lot of other information that's being suppressed. That journalist gets, you know, I don't know, $5 million fine or something like that, goes out of business. And then 10 years later, we find out, no, they were telling the truth the whole time.
Well,
you know, that's a slippery slope we go down.
Oh, it is. And, you know, Harry Reid said he's ready to go down that slope. Harry Reid's a lunatic. Though.
I'm not. I'm definitely not, because I think that right now we're receiving a lot more of the truth, but the problem is there's so much information overload, and I think a lot of it's purposeful.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's about planting doubts in people. I think that's a huge tool used is to plant doubts and to make...
From all sides,
correct. I 100% believe that. But I don't foresee there ever just being a complete North Korea-style shutdown on independent media just because they want to be able to say they promote freedom, they promote blah, 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 freedom of speech. But this is very important to say. We have a Facebook page of, we're 20,000 people away from 2 million followers on Facebook, 1.9, whatever, somewhere in there. Before the election, we were reaching between 40 to 60 million people in a week on Facebook. Since the election, right now, we're reaching 6 million people, 7 million people in a week. And people need to understand that And we haven't done anything different. We haven't changed anything. What's changed is Facebook algorithms and how they allow people to see what's in their news feed. It's nothing anyone ever sees. There's no technical suppression on the surface. No, nobody's doing anything. What are you talking about? We don't know what you're talking about. The people running these pages know it because they do the exact same thing and all of a sudden numbers just drop. It's not like we have less followers. You should be getting that in a day when you have 2 million followers, just mathematically, statistically. But you're getting people, 6 million people in a week seeing something where it was 60 million people. That's, I don't think that's a coincidence since there's been this huge clampdown on these websites. They're not scared of fake news. They don't care about fake news at all. They care about
I beg to differ now. There's these sites are actually very concerned about fake news because it's cut into business.
No,
absolutely.
Here's the thing. CNN don't care about fake news. Politicians, they don't care about fake news. They care about real news that they don't want you seeing and hearing. They talk about fake news and WikiLeaks like those have anything to do with each other. They do not.
So we're talking about mainstream media. I'm sorry.
They want to suppress real information. They want to control the narrative themselves 100%. They want you to hear what they want you to hear. And they want you to hear their version of events. And to help you out, Fox, for instance. We're going to have our panel of all Republicans, and we're going to go throw Juan Williams in there. He's a Democrat, so you get both perspectives. And the flip side with CNN. We're going to throw a couple of Trump pundits in here, and then we're going to have all, you know. But it's all the same side of the coin, and everybody feels like, well, we're getting both sides of the story. No, you're not. You're getting the exact same side from two different perspectives. And people think that that's somehow information or news because you don't know what you're not being told. And I think that's one reason that the social media and the internet, independent media, has been the great equalizer, is now people know what they haven't been told for all these years, and they realize that there have been lies. They realize that they have been misled. And I can't imagine how challenging that is for all the people that have actually been doing all the lying and pushing all the lies, because clearly people don't have trust them anymore. But I say that people don't have trust them anymore. I mean, there's still, I think, a great percentage of the population that believe that Russia had involvement in some hacks that we've seen no evidence of. That's important to say. It's not saying, well, 100% they didn't. We can't say they didn't, but what we can say is there's been zero evidence provided up to this point to say that they did, and yet it's repeated like it's a fact. The same media that says, how dare you say that there's no evidence to suggest that the Pizzagate stuff, there's no evidence, fake, they just say fake over and over and over and over and over with that, and say there's no evidence over and over and over. And yet they turn around and say, Russia definitely did this without providing evidence. As far as whether it's Pizzagate, whether it's Russia, whatever it is, the job of the media is to present information to people. If they want to say that Pizzagate's fake, they don't need to go, hey, it's fake news. They need to say, hey, here's some facts that make this story not true. But they don't do that. They're not interested in providing people with facts and information. They're interested in telling people what to think. That's it for us. Shannon, any last words as we go out?
In the Fed, baby. That's about all I got.
That's it for Anti-Media Radio. Thank you, Kevin. Nick will be here tomorrow night on UCY. We'll be back Thursday. SM Gibson, Anti-Media Radio, out. I'ma let them know, no, through the stereo. Yo, here we go through the stereo.